for 8 plus 3 actually equals 11 this time. It was my grandma's house, but it wasn't just my grandma's house. It was also Video Games Hot Dog. I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And it's Video Games Hot Dog. How's it going, guys? It's been a little while since we did a show.
Pretty good, pretty good.
Nobody doesn't like no retelling of dreams.
Oh, come on. You know, I had a dream. I told Riff about it. He laughed. So yeah. I'm assuming that our listeners will laugh, too. I had a dream that I had a pet gargoyle, like a baby gargoyle. Apparently gargoyles were real.
Like the name. Animated show?
Yeah, no. I never saw that. And somebody was like, how did you do that? Nobody's ever figured out the ritual to get a baby gargoyle to imprint on a human and not, you know, not just kill it. And I was like, well, I stumbled upon it because I was so scared. It turns out the way to get a gargoyle to imprint on you is you curl it up in your hands and you hold it against your heart and then you throw up into your mouth.
Huh.
Yeah. So that's the ritual for getting a gargoyle to imprint on you.
And now you know.
That's what I did this week.
And throwing up is half the battle.
What have you guys been up to? What it's been for fucking ever since we did. Were we all together in San Diego the last time we recorded?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, so we came back from San Diego.
The day before Comic-Con?
No, it was after the first couple days of Comic-Con because we had played some video games. It was before I played Mass Effect 3.
Oh, okay.
So it was like mid-Comic-Con when we did it.
Me 3.
Mm-hmm. I didn't, apart from Mass Effect 3, I didn't play a lot of other video games.
Oh, yeah.
At Comic-Con. But this isn't about video games. What did we do at Comic-Con? I met James Kochalka.
Yeah, did you spooge all over him?
I did. That's while he was trying to read
gross.
The
gross.
We went to Disneyland.
That wasn't at Comic-Con, though.
No, sure.
Although that would be kind of awesome if there was a miniature Disneyland inside of Comic-Con.
I stopped at a gas station on the way back from a Comic-Con and then ate at McDonald's for the first time in probably the last 6 months.
Hmm.
Did you get a date shake?
I didn't.
Did you shake your date?
No. Okay. There's a place in between Phoenix and San Diego where you can get date shakes. They're like milkshakes.
It's called Dateland.
Pez Boy and I stopped there as well, but I opted for the strawberry because I'm not a huge date fan.
Stopped in Dateland and you had strawberries.
Yeah, strawberry shake. They also had a cactus shake on the menu, which I was interested in, but not enough to actually risk it.
It's made with Ecto Cooler.
Did they have a stick shake on there too?
Yeah.
They had a two lamb's tail shake.
Yeah.
I see where you're going with this, Kevin.
I don't know what you're talking about.
We got back into town, and it's been same old shit, trying to get back into a routine.
Yeah, it's impossible.
Playing some video games, finally.
Yeah.
Can't talk about that yet, though.
I drove back and encountered some of the strangest weather I'd ever encountered, especially while driving. Drove underneath the sort of like overhanging dust storm for a long time, which caused the, it was like also at sunset, which caused the lighting to be all weird. There's all kinds of crazy, almost rain. Like
you wrecked the company truck, destroyed all of our merchandise.
Yes. That didn't happen. it was good. The San Diego was fun this year.
We came back and ate at all of our favorite restaurants.
Yes.
All one of them.
There were several different restaurants that we enjoy. There's Hash House A Go-Go. There's Stone Brewery.
No, I mean we came back to Phoenix.
Oh, to Phoenix. And ate it all. Sorry, I misunderstood.
Man. We had a pasty.
We did.
Some mushroom soup.
You like Manuel's, Mexican place? That's another favorite.
We had our traditional pre-show margarita and enchilada.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what I have, at least. You have something that's for babies.
It's delicious.
It's like a whipped cream quesadilla.
That's disgusting.
Whipped cream and breast milk quesadilla.
Yeah.
It's like a quesadilla turned into a burrito, which is exactly what I like, and then sliced up for you for into convenient bite-sized pieces.
Right, sliced up for your tiny 5-year-old boy's mouth.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what it's for.
Mm-hmm.
What did you eat, Riff?
It had chicken in it.
Cool.
Which I had to remind myself that it's pronounced pollo and not polo.
Was it a chicken coop?
I would like this one. Pollo 18.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
13.
The non-video game banter section of this show just gets worse and worse. Because we don't do anything other
than
play.
Well, this is our C material.
We don't think about
it. We're saving all our A material for some as-yet unreleased podcast.
Yeah. We're going to do another podcast. I know you guys just don't get enough of us. Seriously, I hate this segment. I hate talking about things that aren't video games.
Really?
Yeah.
We never have anything to talk about because all we do is video games.
Lately. All I've done is video games. That's true.
I vacuumed my patio today.
You mowed the lawn?
I did. I mowed the lawn here at the office. But it's an office where we make video games, so I think that counts as video games. And I thought about video games while I mowed the lawn, like I have done my entire life.
I ordered a pizza and then ate it while thinking and playing about video games.
Isn't there a video game where you mow a lawn?
Yeah, lawnmower.
I listened to Neil Gaiman reading his book Neverwhere.
Oh yeah,
while playing a video game,
like he was here.
No, it was an audiobook.
Oh. He just sat in the corner.
Yeah, just sat in the corner and read his book to me while I mined for obsidian.
No, he didn't read it. He just read it. He read it to himself, and you listened to him occasionally turning.
Yeah, you could hear him turn the page. Yeah,
sip some tea. I'm assuming he drinks tea.
Probably
English. Hot. there should be some Star Trek news.
Should there?
Sure.
Somebody is doing live reenactments of Star Trek episodes as, like, instead of doing Shakespeare in the Park, they're doing Star Trek in the Park. Okay. I don't know where it is. It might be where they typically do Shakespeare in the Park.
Weird.
The park.
Yeah. But it's a specific park, isn't it? Isn't that...
No, I don't know. I think Shakespeare in the Park is just an institution. It's just like Christmas anywhere. In July. It doesn't have to be a particular July.
Okay. Do you have to drink spear shakes when you go? Never gets old.
They're made of spearmint.
Never gets funny. It's actually bacon shakes.
Yep.
Ew.
Yeah.
That's pretty gross.
Because of the secret of Psalm 69. I bought the ministry album Psalm 69 and listened to that a lot.
Huh.
Pez Boy left all his CDs at the
at
the condo, so all we had to listen to on the way back was a single punk disc. I've forgotten the name of the band, but
that's like a Stephen Wright joke that my dad. It was a Stephen Wright joke that my dad was really fond of saying. It was like I drove from Florida to Washington State, and I only had one 8-track in the car. I don't remember what it was. This is a joke, right? Because if you could only listen to one record, how could you forget?
I remember all the songs and the fact that that guy really hated another band called the Unseen, but I don't remember the name of the band.
Did he really hate Eminem? Because if so, maybe it was the Insane Clown Posse.
If you get stuck without CDs in the company truck, you can always go into the glove compartment and find a CD labeled drugs.
Yeah, I found that on the ground outside a head shop.
Have you played it?
Yeah, it's just a bunch of songs about drugs. I think it has that Afro Man Then I Got High song. It's got a few other songs that the lyrics are about getting high.
About getting high.
Yeah, it was a real find. It was quite a score. I treasure it. Aren't there any other CDs? I thought there were some, wasn't there like a Beck CD?
Well, there was a period of time when, some of Roy's CDs had somehow ended up in the truck. And so we had like five.
Like Midnight five Vultures was in there for a while, which Midnight Vultures is okay. I'd drive across country only heads. Listening to Midnight Vultures. Yeah. Anyway, that's what sorts of CDs are in different trucks.
Yep.
In the last week. Sweet segment, bros.
Yep.
For fuck's sake, what have you been playing?
I've been playing a lot of video games.
What are they?
I made a list.
Wow, that's a list with a lot of things on it.
It is a lot of things.
Wow, that's like a larger than normal post-it note pad. Where'd you get that?
It was on a desk.
Oh, cool.
I just appropriated it. This is
you heard
same.
It here. Exclusive scoop. If you want a larger than average post-it note pad,
it's on a desk. It's on the desk.
I've been using the same size post-it note to record video games hot dog notes since the beginning.
Maybe I just am more sober than I usually am for these, and so everything looks bigger.
Because normally your camera gets further and further away from the table as you get drunker and drunker.
Oh man, we met the guy that decided about those.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Decided about cameras?
No, about how in World of Warcraft when you got drunk, the camera got worse and worse.
Oh, nice.
Lurched back and forth and stuff, and he was happy that that's still in the game.
Was that something that we did that was not a video game?
Yes.
So confusing.
We went and met some dudes at Blizzard. But that's video games.
Yeah. That was cool.
That's in News of the World. That happened in the world.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. All right, so I
played
some...
What have you been playing? Footsie with guys at Blizzard under the table?
Yeah. I played a variety of games on different platforms. I played some Flash games. I played that Cat God versus Sun King.
I played that too.
Flash King. Flash game.
It was a good 45 minutes worth of entertainment.
Yeah, I think I played it like an hour and a half. Because I stuck around.
Because you play things exactly twice as long as they're fun.
Well, I stuck around and got all the achievements because that's my style.
So, yes.
Yeah. I enjoyed it almost the whole time. I would say 95% of the time.
It's like, how would you describe that game? It's like it's kind of a defense game.
Yeah.
You've got a bunch of dudes walking around on the screen.
It was a tower defense game without towers, was what I said. Because it's kind of like one of those tower defense games where you have all those like active things that you do, like cast spells and stuff like that. Only there aren't any like automatic attacks. That's all there is like those special attacks.
Yeah, mana that replenishes. You level up the skills by using them, which is a little annoying because you don't level them up by killing dudes with them or doing damage with them. So by far the best thing to do is go to the first level, just spam a spell not hitting anybody for a long time, then that's finish weak. The level, and then your spells all the way.
I didn't realize that, and so I just kept playing levels where I killed more and more guys with the spells, which was also fine and kind of fun.
I mean, I got that eye stabbing thing where I figured, you know, this is more efficient. This is a more efficient way to do this, even though it's not at all fun. So that's what I'm going to do.
Huh.
I don't know why I just triggered that.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Because I didn't realize that, and so it saved me from that headache.
There are dudes on levels, and you stab them, and there's a worm for the lower levels, and then you lightning.
Yeah.
You can throw birds.
The thematic nature of it was pretty good, and it was also pretty well balanced overall. You know, it was like, it has upgrades, which is always fun. I found the control scheme confusing. You got hotkeys to do things, but the way that it presents things to you, it
lists the mana cost next to the buttons.
Well, it also it gives you 1, 2, 3, 4, and then underneath 1 is 5, and underneath 4 is 6.
Yeah,
so,
which I mean, they're
visually, it was really
they're left
confusing.
To right, top to bottom. But what always confused me is whenever I wanted to use a particular skill that I wasn't using a lot, I would always hit the number that corresponded to its mana cost. It's like, here's this list of icons, and then there's numbers, and I know that each one of those has a number key that's a shortcut to it. Oh, right. It must be the number that's written on there.
No, not at all.
Because you can't look at a 3 and think 2. It's like that Brain Age game where it keeps showing you the name of a color.
Yeah.
Print, and you have to say what color it's printed in.
Yeah.
Blue.
Yeah, it can never understand blue.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you, and I felt like a racist, but if you said brew, it almost always worked.
Really?
Yeah.
That's weird and funny.
Yeah, I don't. What are you going to do?
Then,
not play Brain Age anymore is what I'm going to do.
but the magical floating head will be sad.
Yeah. Then I never turn him on again.
Then I played that Zombotron game. Which I think you played for a little while and then got stuck in the geometry.
Oh, I played it for like 30 seconds and got so pissed off. Like, every time you're like running around shooting zombies and you got guns and shit, and then there's elevators that if you happen to jump past them, you get stuck in the fucking geometry and have to suicide 100 times. I don't know, man.
How did you do that 100 times in the first 30 seconds?
I don't know. I might be exaggerating about
maybe you're really good at video games
or the other
and you just
things.
Get frustrated really fast.
Yeah.
It was, I found it thematically pretty good. It was really well designed, and the graphics were cool and the theme was cool. But yeah, like it was just kind of weird and buggy, and like for all the polish that it seemed to have, like just the playability of it was really kind of frustrating.
It was all polish and no sausage.
Yes. I would definitely check that game out if you are not easily annoyed by getting stuck in walls and stuff. I played Puzzle Agent 1 on the iPhone.
And you played it on the iPhone?
I did. I played through the whole thing.
I'm surprised that you bought a copy of that when there was one sitting on a device right next to you.
Because you had talked about it being kind of interesting, and I was, you know, I like Telltale. I like the people at Telltale and stuff. And I hadn't, because I never played the Sam & Max games. Like, I really hadn't done much. I had not played much in the Telltale universe, and I was pretty disappointed with Puzzle Agent. It was, the puzzles were kind of not interesting and repetitive, and the plot and the writing and stuff was pretty good in the story, but then it just ended like it felt like it was building up to something, and then it just ended. And I was like, what?
It's episodic, right? So the second one continues.
It does, but they didn't handle it gracefully.
It was $5 for something that felt like $2 worth of content.
Well,
that was what
feels
was weird.
Like $2 worth. I don't think it would have felt like $2 worth of content if you were playing it on a computer. Right? I mean, I think this keeps coming up in like stuff that I'm reading. It's like,
because you feel like an iPhone game. I have played dollar iPhone games way, way longer than I played this $5.
Right, but those games are too cheap.
Okay.
I guarantee that this had the budget of a game that would sell for $5 and not a game that would sell for $1.
That may be true. There were a tremendous number of bugs, like all kinds of things that I recognized from us developing a game with dialogue bubbles and stuff like that. You could, like, all the little arrows pointing to the like mouths of people with the arrows, they were like all over the place. It would like draw things and they would like move, and it was just like all kinds
of
weird.
You didn't read the footnote about the ghost mouths?
No, I did not read about I did not read about the ghost mouths. Yeah, it was just,
well, no wonder the story didn't make any sense.
Super, super glitchy.
That was my favorite Nancy Drew book. Yeah. This is Nancy Drew versus the ghost mouths.
The puzzles were kind of frustrating. There were at least two or three times when I had solutions that, as far as I could tell, were totally valid according to their rules and just were not accepted. And I don't know if I wasn't thinking of something correct or if they weren't careful enough with their puzzle design.
They were all like, well, they weren't all, but they were largely like my least favorite kind of puzzles from the Professor Layton games, where it's just like, here's a situation, now solve this problem and type in the answer, as opposed to like, here, play with this machine and make it work or whatever. Yeah. You know, I like the ones that are interactive instead of you just having to do some logic.
Yeah. I guess my problem was that I had higher expectations. If I went into it with no expectations, it probably would have been fine.
It is weird though. The notion that $5, which I think it was like $7 actually, maybe the
HD, it was five when I bought
the
it.
HD version was $7
on the phone.
I bought both of them just because I want to give Telltale money.
Yeah.
You know, we need all kinds of things in this economy. You got to go to the Telltale game store and give the Telltale game store some of your money.
Sure.
That's a fuck you if you don't like Christmas line there.
I mean, that's an interesting problem where games are so cheap on the iPhone that they have set the bar like so that you can't actually spend any time developing something because it costs too much to develop.
You can if you're going to sell 100,000 copies of it, right?
But nobody's going to sell 100. I mean, like, and by saying nobody, there's like, you know, 10 people are going
to
sell.
Somebody will, but then that's the thing. The one guy that actually manages to make, you know, a year's salary off of something that he spent 6 months developing on the iPhone kind of ruins it for everybody else because, like, I don't know. You know, there's the people complaining about, there was like Final Fantasy Tactics was released for the iPhone and it was $15 and everybody was like, that's fucking crazy. And then there were a lot of people saying like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
Like this game was $50 when it came out and it's not that old and like, it's a good game. And like, you'd be like, if they sold a DS port for $15, you would say that was a fucking huge bargain, you know? But like,
okay, if they sold it for $15 and there were DS style controls, like, I find playing games on the iPhone, unless they are very specifically designed for the iPhone screen, to be very frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, and even games that are designed for the iPhone screen are pretty frustrating.
No, I agree. I think it's a weird thing. I think it's done a really weird thing to like, what, because I mean, I've certainly bought a bunch of $60 games that I did not feel were $60 experiences.
Sure.
You know? And it's like, sure, I mean, I bought a lot of dollar games on the iPhone that are fucking crap, too, right? Yeah. You know, which is easy to do, but it's like, I don't know. When I see an expensive iPhone game, I think, you know, that's probably going to be a high-budget game. It might not be good, but I think the fact that they're selling it for $5 or $7, probably, I mean, you don't complain that Plants vs. Zombies cost that much. You get a lot more. You get
a ton of game.
A lot more value out of it,
yeah,
right?
I mean, you know, I played through that game two or three times, and I have played through it again almost entirely recently. And like, it does not stop being fun. Whereas Puzzle Agent is a one-time playthrough experience that wasn't particularly satisfying the first time through.
You can keep drilling the memories of solving the puzzles out of your head, and then
sure, make it harder each time. Yeah. That's true.
Just, you know, shave that patch on the back of your neck so we can access the reset button.
And then based on a recommendation from our tweeters, I played the Everlands game.
I also played that.
What is that? I have not heard of that.
So it's a game that you play on a hex grid with tiles that are effectively like cards. You basically get sort of a deck of tiles They have...
this is the Alice's Army one you were talking
about. Kind of, yeah. There's like
similar to Alice's Army.
Hex, there's like certain sides attacks, things that can attack out. And when subsequent tiles are placed, the tiles that have already been placed attack once.
And they'll counter along their arrows, and then your dude will attack along his arrows. Yeah. This is a game that makes me feel stupid. It's like Set. That card game, Set. Mm-hmm. I think that it takes me four times as long to identify a valid move in the game Set as it takes most other people.
You think so?
I am so fucking bad at that game, I might as well not even be playing it. And that's kind of how I feel.
Are assuming that other people are seeing stuff faster. I have played Set with you, and it's not like...
I don't think you've ever played Set with me. I think I've refused to play Set after the first couple of times I played Set.
I thought I played with you.
I don't think so.
And I thought you did not get one-fourth as many sets as everybody else.
You're imagining it. You're imagining a better version of me at Set. Everlands, <It's possible. laughs> like, basically every turn, it might as well be like, which one of these dudes do you just want to hand to your opponent? So I'd pick a dude, and then it's like, oh, okay. So it's like, it starts out, I mean, it seems to me like going first is a gigantic advantage.
Or disadvantage.
Well, okay, sure. I guess if you're way smarter than I am, which, okay. You know, you are.
It alternates. You sometimes go first, and sometimes the opponent goes first.
Yeah.
So.
I got to like the fifth or sixth level, and after 30 tries, I gave up.
Huh.
Because it's just like, all right, so they've got a guy on the board. Now I'll put a guy on the board. Now they'll put a guy on the board. Now I'll put a guy on the board. And at the end of that move, they have four guys on the board.
Oh, yeah. We didn't really describe how that works. So all the little tiles have attack values and hit point values. If a card it has persistent hit points. So like, let's say it has 5 hit points and it takes 2 hit points, it'll have 3 mm-hmm. the next round. If it then takes
What if it takes 4 hit points?
Yeah, sorry. You can do the math on your own. If it then takes 3 more points of damage, it will heal back up, but become the opponent's card.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Traitors.
Yeah. It's sort of described narratively, and it kind of makes a little bit of sense. But
it gets AIDS.
Yeah, basically. Okay. Space AIDS. It's for all the like design that went into it, it was not a ton of fun.
Hmm.
It was weird. I don't know why I didn't really enjoy it. I think it was too, like, the early levels I thought were kind of too easy.
All right.
The opposite of what you were saying. Mm-hmm. And then the last level was just so hard. The computer maintains an advantage against you the whole time. It always has cards you do not have.
Hmm.
You unlock the card. Like,
you're
fighting against a frog, and then after you beat that level, then you have a frog in your arms.
Okay, so it always has something you don't have, and then the last couple of levels are just series of matches where it has cards that not only do you not have, but when you defeat them, instead of them coming over to your control, they just go away.
Oh.
So that changes the game kind of significantly, and then the last battle is just, like, super, super hard compared to everything else that had come before. Like, the curve just went way, way steep at the very end. It would maybe be interesting to play versus, you know, 1v1 or whatever, mm-hmm. but their version of 1v1 just gives each player a random deck.
Mm.
And so someone might have just a huge advantage in terms of which cards they got.
You think it's really random? You don't think that it tries to balance them out at all?
I don't know. It looked pretty random. I mean, sure, ideally, there's probably a point value assigned to each card.
Ideally,
but,
though, like every card, you could. There are enough... like axes there that you could just balance every card against every other card.
Kinda, yeah.
Right.
I mean, I saw some elements of design, but I also felt like some things were just kind of thrown in there. I'm not sure, you know, like, so then the win condition is whoever has, you play the game until every hex tile is filled up, and whoever has more than 50% of the board ties go to the computer, which is annoying.
Yeah.
Whoever has more than 50% of the board wins.
Hmm.
You have to have like 51% of the board as the human player, I guess. I don't know what happens if in a two-player game, if somebody has 50% of the board. Maybe the person who went first loses or something.
Do they not? It seems like it would be trivial to just always to only make boards that had an odd number of hexes.
Maybe. I don't know. There usually are symmetric, so it's...
Yeah, but with a hex grid, you can have 7 and right. It's symmetrical, right?
Sure.
So, like...
Yeah, I don't know.
No, I don't either. I didn't ever count them. I never saw a case where it was 50-50. Because it was always like literally every hex belonged to the computer.
It's pretty hard to lose that badly.
Yeah, I manage. Like, it'll get to the point at the end of the game where it's like, oh, okay, there's literally nothing that I can put anywhere that won't get killed by the counterattacks. And
sure.
The only way that I could set that up is if I did not accomplish anything
during the game. Playing, did you set up situations where there were hex spaces that you knew were safe because you had set up so much attack going into them that you didn't need to bother putting anything in them?
I guess not.
Okay, so that's something that the computer is doing all the time, and you also need to be aware of while you're setting cards down. You need to be like, it's like protecting territory in chess or whatever.
Yeah, I never think of chess like that either.
Okay, so it was very similar to that in terms of sort of the mindset.
I roll a d20 to determine which piece I'm going to move.
Okay.
And then I just move it at random.
Oh, well.
And if it's a legal move, then that's my move. If it's not, then I just try again until somebody doesn't yell at me.
Cool.
Yeah.
Or until you just flip the table.
Some of the cards let you set down two cards on your turn, which, because you're trying to cover up more space, is good. But the second cards are, like, those two card situations are often, the second card is not very strong.
It's like a filler.
Right.
So
it's always an egg.
It's an egg or a bee.
Another bee.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for the recommendation. It seems like the kind of thing I saw it and I was like, ooh, this looks good. I'm going to buy this. Fuck, I'm bad at games.
I mean, I enjoyed playing it and I think it was cool to talk about. I don't exactly understand why I didn't really like it by the end. Because it seemed like
all the way through it anyway.
Yeah.
Tell me the name of it again.
Everlands.
Okay.
See, I thought, you know, I like things that start with Ever, writing, like Everclear.
The writing was kind of terrible.
I like EverQuest.
The story could have been good, but it was like the actual just writing was bad.
I like EverReady batteries.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Those are the ones with the cat on them, right?
I like Evergreen trees.
Mm-hmm. Uh huh.
I played this game. So while we're in San Diego, we, in addition to going to Blizzard and hanging out and talking with people there, which we'll talk about later, I guess. One of my friends who is a level designer on StarCraft II. We went to dinner with him and he recommended an iPhone game called Shadow Cities, which I spent some time playing.
You talking about this makes me just not want to play it at all.
Yeah.
Sweet. Let's hear it.
It is. So it is sort of like a graphical version of like a Mafia Wars game. Kind of. It's not so directly like, it's not like you have to have a clan or whatever, and like the bigger your clan, the better you do necessarily, but it definitely helps. It's definitely a social game. There's two factions. The mood of the game is pretty good. The writing is not great.
You're like a space wizard.
It's a game set in the world. When you start the game, you are like a mage in your location on a map. But there are like these magical gates around, and the object of the game basically is to take over and control these nodes, which then generate sort of energy, and like the team, the side which sort of generates the most energy by the end of the game wins.
Is it like a cyclical, like a season based thing?
Yeah, there's every week is a new season.
Oh.
And
but you level up and are persistent.
I think your character is persistent, yeah, from season to season.
Hmm.
So you can, it's much easier to do better in the, once you've leveled all the way to the cap. There, you cannot move around the board other than just literally moving around in the world, unless you teleport to either objects in the world, or players can create these beacons, so you can teleport like arbitrary distances.
When you say in the world, are you talking about the actual
world? Our world.
Like Google Maps?
Yes.
Based?
Yeah, it's played on Google Maps.
On the map. Your avatar, if you like, unless you have teleported somewhere, if you move in the real world, you move in the game.
Okay.
If you die in the real world, do you die in the game?
I think so. Like, literally, the best strategy to this game is to get a bunch of people together with phones with this game on it, and then get a bus and drive around your town and go to all the nodes and like conquer them all and go to all the enemies' places and just wreck their shit. And
you were getting spawn camped at our house.
Yep. So where I live happened to be a hotbed of activity for the enemy faction. The office was fine for my faction, but where I live was just
granularity
super unpleasant.
People actively playing.
Yep.
When you were playing.
Yep.
Near enough that our house that they weren't near the office.
Oh yeah, no. The house and the office are
like seven miles apart.
Yeah, the granularity is pretty small.
That is fucking weird that there would be that many people actively playing this game in our neighborhood.
I mean, I feel like playing this game on a bike would be pretty ideal, because you could like bike from one place to another, do your stuff, and then get away if you needed to. ideal would be to have like somebody else driving while you were playing, because you could just war dial.
If your goal was to waste your time and gas.
Sure. I guess I'm just not entirely sure what space this kind of game is meant to inhabit. It reminded me of the sort of Mafia Wars tick-based games, where you have energy to cast spells, which replenishes over time. But you can cast, like, I would say probably 3 or 4 or 5 spells, at least in the first, 5 or 6 levels of your character, at a time. And then you wait like 4 minutes or 5 minutes to recharge all your energy.
That's a frustrating amount
and
of
that,
time.
Yeah, that was like super frustrating. There were a lot of times where like, there's an enemy here. Oh, then there are like random just computer generated enemies that spawn in the world that can give you experience too. The leveling curve on that is just, it takes freaking forever to level up. Based on those enemies.
Killing those guys, is it better killing players?
Yeah, much, much better to kill other players. Okay. In terms of the rewards. Especially the rewards for your faction, like the energy that you get for the sort of the factional seasonal rewards. The death penalty is that you lose all of your current health and mana, and then you have to wait 40 seconds to respawn at your physical location. So if there are a bunch of opposing faction members just hanging out in your physical location, it is incredibly difficult to respawn and get away before they just kill you again.
That seems terrible.
That's when I just sort of finally gave up the game in frustration. I was stuck for like half an hour. I could not respawn and like get away fast enough. They were like, I don't know if I had just internet lag or whatever. Playing the game where there's internet lag is almost like super unpleasant when it's PvP, because they will by the time you have sort of respawned, they've already killed you again. Or if you try to warp away, it will show you having warped away, and then you die like 10 seconds later, which is super frustrating.
It seems so unlikely to me that there were a bunch of people in our neighborhood playing this game at the exact moment that you were playing.
So
the game.
You can move around
like
the world.
A turret when you're logged off?
No, you disappear from the world when you're logged off.
Huh.
So you don't have to be like at our physical house. There is a way to move around the world, which is incredibly, incredibly frustrating. If you have two people, you can teleport to another person that's sort of like within a block, basically. If you have two people, you can sort of teleport to them. It puts you in a random location around them. So if you're trying to move, let's say, north, whoever is the most north, the person who's south of them teleports to them, hopes that they get teleported north of them. Then the other person will teleport to them, hope that they get teleported north. So sometimes you have to teleport like 5 or 6 times towards somebody, and then you'll get teleported past them. So it's like leapfrogging, but randomly, like a random walk kind of leapfrog, and it just takes forever to get anywhere. It would be much faster to just go outside and walk somewhere if you were there. But the problem is, because you can use portals to get somewhere, if you want to like portal to China,
right,
and then
move,
go
yeah, to,
10
to,
blocks to the left.
To North China.
Yeah, it would take you days.
China 2.
So, yeah, like, the game, and then on top of all of this is this, sort of like microtransaction model where you can refill your energy for real world dollars.
So you can pay how much to avoid waiting 4 minutes?
The best deal is you spend $100 and you get 1,500 instant mana refill things.
Huh.
So whatever the math is on that. 1/15 of a dollar,
so 6,000 minutes.
Yeah, I guess. What, six cents for an instant refill?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So that's what 6,000 minutes is. 100 hours.
Oh, I mean, it's how you're saving in terms of your
yeah,
saving.
In terms of saving 4 minutes, 100 hours. I mean, you could just for $100, you are getting 100 hours worth of what you'd be getting for free.
Well, sort of, right? Because you don't have to like actively wait there while you're like, you could turn the game off and then come back 4 minutes later and have full energy, and you could do something else in the meantime, right? Like,
no, I'm not saying that it would literally take 100 hours. Oh, okay. But I'm saying it gives you the ability to shut off the game clock to fast forward 100 hours for $100.
I guess, sort of. It doesn't really work that way. I mean, because you would use all your energy in a minute and then refill your energy and then do it again. Like, it would.
Because I know we're making this sound great. The name of this game is Shadow Cities.
Because it is free, it is worth checking out just to see it. The there are some ideas in it, and the sort of the tone and the mood is kind of cool, which kept me kind of interested for a while. But it's kind of hard to understand what's going on.
When we watched Jason play it at the restaurant, I was baffled. Yeah, I was like, "What the fuck are you doing?" I don't know if he was looking around or teleporting around. Like
he was. He sort of came into the game, showed us. He like killed something, which casting spells is like a gestural thing. All the things are pretty abstract, so you don't. It's hard to know what things are unless you've sort of seen the game from the beginning of the tutorial. And then he went up to the like map view to show us something, and then came back down. Like it just. It introduces all the controls pretty well, but
the fact that it doesn't
everything
like,
is kind of mushy. I mean,
do you start out protected from being ganked by the boatload of pricks in your lake?
At the very beginning, you're not in the actual world. You're just in sort of a little simulacra of the world.
I mean, the fact that can happen to you. I mean, like getting ganged up on is just like.
It's unpleasant.
If you can't leave.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the thing with, like, in World of Warcraft, if you were getting spawn camped, you could always just res at the cemetery and.
Or walk to a different cemetery or different something.
Place. Yeah. Like, you could get away.
Yep.
But, like, not like.
Because it's tied to your physical location, I think there's a lot of problems.
That
there.
Seems like the kind of experience that you just shouldn't allow a player to get stuck in.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like that whole. Not going to open up the same can of worms again, but it's like, should you let players control what's going on in the world, or should you have a fun video game for people to play with other players, right? I mean, it's...
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sure there are cool stories that come out of this.
Oh, sure, I'm sure those dudes were having a grand old time. They were like, oh, that noob, he's never going to play this game again.
I mean, because they were like 5 or 6 levels higher than I was, there was just no way I was ever going to be able to kill them. They regenerated mana and could cast it and kill me faster than I could like do damage to them.
Plus, they're probably just bored rich kids in our neighborhood. And they've spent all of their dad's money on energy potions.
And then the last sort of interesting thing was another recommendation from one of our listeners was to check out Gaikai, Gaikii. K-A-I, which is this thing which I had heard talked about a couple years ago and was like, I don't know that that's going to happen anytime soon, where a game is launched on a remote server and they stream the game to you on your computer and you are controlling it in real time and like all of your commands are going there. So I played Mass Effect 2 on my Mac for like half an hour and it looked great.
Right. Like that was, I did not believe that it was actually happening. If
it was not real, it was extremely convincing fake.
Like that, I was reminded of the way that I felt the first time in 1997 that I saw somebody using real audio, which was like, whoa, there's sound coming from the internet in real time.
Yeah.
That's new.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
I mean, I understand all of the technologies underneath this, and I just did not think that the internet was really capable of doing it.
Yeah. This can't be a thing.
It totally could be a thing. You can stream movies over the internet, and they're fine.
But you can't stream. You can't stream them with a back and forth that is fast enough for you to dodge a bullet by
don't
hitting.
Need a ton of upstream bandwidth to like send a couple characters.
But you need extremely low latency if
you
you're going to play
super low latency.
I mean, if you were playing some kind of turn-based game, then sure. Yeah, but sure. I mean,
I did not participate in enough combat to know how it felt.
I saw you playing it, and you would hit left, and the guy would run left pretty much instantaneously, and would stop when you let off the key. But
it seemed to me to be pretty fluid. That's all I have is my impression of it.
What's it? There's some other company doing that. I've never heard it called the name.
Gaikai.
I've never heard that. But
I don't know. It was all Electronic Arts games. I don't know if it's under like a subsidiary of them or that's just who they've got.
But
partnership right now.
I have not been able to figure out how latency can allow this to work right. How can the feeling of pushing the button on the controller that has 3 feet of distance to your PS3.
With a good internet connection, you've only got
miles to a
server. You've got tens of milliseconds of latency, right? Which is not that bad,
right? But I mean, even something like World of Warcraft only feels fluid because of the client prediction, right? Like, it just, this does not seem like the kind of thing that would work at a large, because, I mean, Netflix streaming mostly works at a large scale, mm-hmm. but it's like immensely taxing on the infrastructure, only going one direction, and still fucks up a lot of the time.
Yeah, I had half an hour of play, and I didn't do anything that was really twitchy. I was just
I saw it, and it was fucking magic.
And it was beautiful, and it was like a game that does not exist on the Mac that I was just playing in a window on my Mac, like seamlessly. And I was like, I feel like the future is happening right now. It was really cool.
I don't trust it. I'm shaking my cane at it. I want it off my yard.
I really want to be curmudgeonly about this, but it's no idea. I don't know, man.
It's in beta. They wanted a bunch of feedback based on
I wonder how much they're going to have to charge people to make it so. Because I mean, I feel like it also requires significantly more hardware on their end to run Mass Effect 2. I mean, it was at a fairly low res.
I wonder how heavy it is on people that have bandwidth caps on their internet provider.
Oh, I mean, that's, yeah.
I mean, I think all of these things are for people who have unlimited bandwidth.
Yeah. And that's not going to exist for much longer.
What would be crazy is there would be nothing preventing you from playing Mass Effect 2 on your phone, right? Like,
you just get a little wireless mouse and keyboard. The other thing is that I can't think of the name of that's doing the same thing. They're working on an iPad client. They may already have an iPad client.
Yeah, I mean, you hook up, because I mean, an iPad could just be a screen. You get a Bluetooth keyboard and mouse, and then you've got just a totally portable, anywhere you have internet, you have every game or every application.
Assuming that you have enough bandwidth to a near enough server. To allow it to play,
I don't know. I really don't know.
It's crazy. It's like, what does...
Maybe gnomes come into your house, and it's, like, the loading time is just gnomes putting a really cool PC inside your house.
Yeah. They've harnessed the magic of Santa Claus.
Yeah. But, I mean, there shouldn't have been any loading time, right?
Like, there was load time. There was the loading time for the game.
I mean, does that mean that they're spinning up an instance of a computer that's running that? Because why would they, right? Like, why wouldn't they just have one ready to go?
I mean,
I guess it's loading your data.
It could be doing that. It could have been caching all possible moves that I could be making.
Okay.
I really don't know. I mean, that would be a way of doing it, right? Well, you calculate every possible thing that somebody could do.
Yeah. And so it's just like you have a little quantum simulator and that's why you never get killed.
Yeah, yeah. It's just warping you to the universe indicated by your button presses.
It was actually, I was actually playing Prince of Persia. I just didn't realize it.
Oh, like the old school
Prince of Persia, and he was playing Mass Effect.
Yeah,
but yeah, I just couldn't tell.
Jordan Mechner's younger brother was playing Mass Effect.
Yeah. So yeah, I've been playing a bunch of shit. Sorry, I spent so much time talking about
myself. No, it's okay. You played everything that I played, though, so I don't got shit to talk about. I did play our friend of the show, David, asked how I felt about Mass Effect 3, because he's a buddy of ours that works at BioWare. So he got me in past the ridiculous lines before the BioWare base opened at Comic-Con, and I got to play through the Mass Effect 3 demo.
How was it?
I did not play Mass Effect 2 on a console. And so the fact that this was identical in controls to Mass Effect 2 did not make it so I had any idea what the fuck was going on most of the time.
You played the entire game before, and Mass Effect 2, a conversion from PC to console, was that confusing?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Jesus
really?
Christ. Yeah.
Huh. That sucks.
Yeah. Like, I mean, just not knowing, I probably, if I sat down to play Mass Effect 2 right now, I wouldn't remember how to switch weapons. Like, I would have to pop in and glance at the controls or whatever. And for whatever reason, like, I don't mind scrolling through a list of 1,000 key bindings in a PC game, but, like, when the load screen has that thing where it's a picture of a controller with, like, 80 things with lines pointing to each of the buttons, I just look at that and I'm like, yeah, fuck no. There's no way I'm going to remember any of this.
Did you ever take an anatomy class?
No.
Okay. Just curious whether that would have also stymied you in the same way. You're like, this picture, duodenum, I don't know.
If it was just memorizing
Xiphoid process,
did, having to process them right now. I mean, if it was like now make this frog do a dance by inserting your fingers into various things, I would have been like, no, I can't.
Have you seen that video of that weird Japanese dish?
That squid that's pours soy sauce on it and it flips its shit?
That was both disgusting awesome and terrifying. And
so anyway, I had some trouble and not really understanding how to like switch weapons and not being very effective at commanding my team. Mates, because I mean, everything that I did in Mass Effect 2 on the PC, like, it basically gave me a hotbar of all of the skills that were available to all of my teammates. And so while I'm shooting a dude, it's like, all right, while I'm reloading, I'm going to sweep the reticle over to this other guy and then hit a button to tell Morden to throw a fireball at the guy or whatever, right? And so, like, I got used to all that stuff on the PC, and it's just entirely different. Like, on the console, there's all these like radial menus that pop up when you open up when you pull a trigger or whatever. And it was just like, this is too different than what I'm accustomed to.
I see.
Sure. So it was just tough. And it's like, I have a really hard time with cover based games because what I'm doing all the fucking time is just leaping in and out of cover. Irrespective of what I'm trying to do.
I had never played a cover-based shooter before the Mass Effect 2 stuff, and I was like, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? I'm here behind this cover, and I'm popping up and I'm not shooting. I never actually took a shot. I just kept popping up and down.
Yeah.
And that and not having WASD and mouse, like I really don't like dual analog third-person or first-person games like that. Like, I'm just like, I cannot turn around fast enough. Like, I'm constantly swinging slowly around to face whatever is shooting me.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, that has to be because the first-person shooters we grew up with were, I mean, you didn't have any fucking cover. You circle strafed around the dude and shot them. I can't deal with cover shooters either.
I mean, it was fine on the PC. Like, I got to where, like, you know, I beat Mass Effect 2, and I enjoyed it, and I'm sure I was playing it on, like, pansy-ass casual mode or whatever, but, like, you know, I wasn't, like, terrible at it.
In Deus Ex, I will often run around the corner, which is kind of like taking cover.
Sure.
Oh, man, I saw that. I saw...
Human Revolution.
Yeah, after the last cast we recorded, I went and watched some dudes playing that demo of Human Revolution, and it looks fucking awesome.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited.
But I would never want to play it on a console.
Is it not coming out for the PC?
I think it probably is.
Okay.
I don't know if it's going to be...
I'll play it on Gaikai when it comes out.
Sure, yeah. You have to use an Xbox controller, though.
No.
Sorry, it's actually only for the Wii.
I'm sure they can emulate that.
You have to strangle a dude using your Wiimote. You have to have the nunchuck connected by the wire, or it won't work. I mean, that's actually true, but not for the strangling reasons. It's just the joystick not hooked up to anything. It'd be like that Whoopi Goldberg movie. So yeah, it was pretty. The gameplay segment that they offered up in the demo was like, it was okay. I mean, there were just like a bunch of dudes. It had that Morden guy. I think his name's Morden. I don't know. He's like my favorite character. Apparently, they changed the guy that voiced him, but almost nobody noticed. I didn't notice. I didn't.
You didn't notice.
I didn't. Have you guys placed Sisnood? What was it that you asked us in the car?
I don't remember. I was pretty drunk. Has everybody played as Snood? I think is what I ended up saying. What I meant is, has everybody played Snood?
Okay.
But I think I said, has everybody played as Snood? And you were like,
But you said placed a Snood.
That maybe placed a Snood. Yeah. Played a Snood. No. Played Snood is what I meant to say.
Yeah, anyway, Snood, what the fuck? Puzzle Bobble, only everybody had it for whatever reason.
Bubble Bobble.
How come?
Double Trouble.
It's terrible.
How come that guy made so much money?
Did he make money?
He sold it. It was shareware. And then it came out for the fucking Game Boy. Like,
wow, really?
Yeah. I remember seeing Snood on the shelf at GameStomp.
How is that possible?
I don't know.
Weird.
Maybe it's just different enough.
It's different Tetris. Enough, but like, how did somebody invest enough money to make that into a cartridge?
Because it was crazy popular.
Weird.
Every, like, girls were playing it, man.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It's a crossover hit.
Anyway, Mass Effect 3 was really pretty. It was in this environment that was like this complex of buildings on either side of a valley, and like you could look out across to the other parts of the level, and it was pretty, and it seemed like it had like good vistas.
I like a good vista.
Just shooting a bunch of dudes, and then at the end there's a big robot, but then it like fades to black before you get to kill the robot. It's like, oh, I want to play this more. And then
they leave you wanting more.
We were still sitting in there, and they were like, yeah, so they decided to let this group of 30 Marines in early to play. Half of them are playing the Old Republic, and half of them are playing Mass Effect 3. And then we hear somebody outside, you guys ready for some Mass Effect 3? And then this chorus of, yeah! So we're like, all right, we better get out of here.
Oh, you didn't stick around to watch that?
No, man.
That would have been kind of awesome.
One thing that I learned in my childhood is that if there's a whole bunch of Marines about to storm into the room that you're in, you should probably go to a different room.
I don't know. I think it would have been great.
I was a child in Vietnam during the Vietnam War.
Okay. That might twinge your experience.
Yeah.
Did you ever talk about and or have you kept playing that tower game? Tower sim?
Tiny Tower? Tiny Tower. No, I've stopped. I finally stopped. I can't finally bring myself.
Habit.
I can't bring myself to delete my little mans, but I haven't run it in a couple weeks.
So all this, what you're saying is all of your stores are unstocked and they're all starving in your tower.
That's starving. They're just posting to their little Facebook about how they hope they don't lose their job. But they're not going to lose their jobs. They're in stasis indefinitely.
Okay.
Why can't I delete that? Why do I care about that?
Did you ever talk about that game?
Yeah.
Okay, I couldn't remember.
Yeah. We went through the exact same sequence of dumb jokes that they went through on the following giant bomb cast about it, where they were talking about Utes Tower, Tower. And Utes Tower, and then the My Cousin Vinny joke.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't like that.
It's good that we're on the same wavelength as those guys.
Oh, sure. Those are cool guys. That's not what I mean.
And they doesn't afraid of anything.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I have played anything else.
Well, all right then.
Mostly been on my phone. I took my 3DS and Ocarina of Time with me to San Diego for a month and never even turned it on.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think I might have already fallen out of love with that.
Out of love with the 3DS?
Not just Ocarina of Time 3D. I mean, I lost my momentum.
Wow, yeah, that sucks. I kind of did what I have done to every single one of those games, which is play it up to the last dungeon and then never play the last dungeon.
Mm. Oh, you guys are killing me. How can you do this?
I mean, it's not... I just got distracted by other stuff. I'm not refusing to play it.
Sure.
Me neither.
Yeah.
I've been... A lot of the time,
I loved it. It just hasn't happened.
A lot of the time that I would have been playing handheld games, I've been reading this book that I got, which is this history of computer RPGs. That is... I cannot recommend it because it's not a very good book, I don't think.
Is your contention that it was written by a sixth grader?
No, it's written by an English professor.
Oh, okay.
Who is also into video... But it is written like a high school research paper. Like, it's just, there's a lot of...
Is it an academic paper?
There's a lot of... there's a lot of, like, this is what this chapter is going to be about, and then the chapter, and then this is what this chapter was about. It's like, you could have dedicated 150% of the detail to each individual game that it's talking about, gotten rid of all of the sentences that literally serve no purpose other than to, like, introduce things that they were about to talk about and reiterate the same points, and you would have ended up with a book that was 25% shorter and 100% more interesting.
Huh.
That's math. Anyway, I'm learning a lot about video games that I didn't know existed, and I'm like, it makes me want to, and this is more of like a Tumblr than like an essay or whatever, but it makes me want to go through the chronology of games. It makes me want to go through every game that he writes about in this and write about how the item systems work.
Right.
Like, investigate how what did an item consist of?
Hmm.
How did you get them? Like, what level of, like, randomness was there? Like, what, you know...
What was the inventory system like?
What did...
Crafting, if any.
Yeah, exactly. I think that would be a neat thing to, like, sort of map out and see where the lineages are. Because I was thinking about this.
You come up with a cool vocabulary, too, probably. Because, like, there's probably, you know, games probably do similar things, but, like, it's just different enough.
And in looking at all of that, I bet you would see a lot of holes that could be potentially filled of things that have not been done yet.
Yeah, or systems that were particularly satisfying.
Systems that have become lost to time.
That crazy, like, system in, was it Zelda? That where, like, it... what you got depending on which frame you killed the monster.
Yeah, that was weird. That, I don't think that was a system so much as it was a like, how can we have these drops randomized without having to use any more memory for a system for randomizing
these? Sure. But it was really clever.
Like it was, we should talk about this on a future video. Okay. Hot Dog, if not, because I think we talked about it on a KOL podcast back in the day, but the way that The Legend of Zelda determines when to drop an item and what item to drop is like really fascinating and complex. And it's like, it makes sense when you think about it because you're like, oh yeah, you know, it like the game did kind of train me that if I needed bombs, I should kill blue dudes because the blue dudes had a different drop table that had more bombs on it.
Yep.
And if you were doing a good job of killing stuff without getting hit, you tended to get more items to drop because of this counter. It was really interesting.
It was very clever.
I probably would not even considered The Legend of Zelda in that. Maybe I'll do this. It's not outside of the scope of my job description to spend hours that I'm getting paid for studying item systems in RPGs.
No, I mean, that's totally in line with what you're supposed to do.
And maybe there's other people that would care. I mean, the thing is, I'd only be collecting information from elsewhere on the internet, right? But just putting it all together.
Oh, I see. You wouldn't actually be doing first-hand investigation.
Well, I mean, if I had to, but like, I don't want to play all the way through wizardry, right? Because that shit is boring. Right. But I'm sure I could find a fact somewhere that's like, this is what all the items in wizardry are and what they do. And it's like, you know, it'd just be interesting to just like build a little database. Like, this is how many different items there were. And this is how many of them were weapons and how many of them were rings and how what kinds of things the rings did. And, you know, like, I don't know. That kind of shit is fascinating to me. And maybe somebody else is interested in it, too. So, yeah, that's what I've been playing.
Cool.
Sweet segment, bros.
I've been playing some games.
an hour in and we didn't get to riff? Sorry, man.
It's cool because I only played like three things.
Okay. What'd you play?
I finished the ridiculous Minecraft project that I had conceived of just before leaving San Diego.
Oh, which was what?
Which was a self-repairing cobblestone wall and a self-loading TNT cannon to shoot at it, which I finally finished last night, except for some little cosmetic changes that I'm making.
You should make a video.
I probably should if I can figure out how to do that. Had to build it twice.
Why?
I built the wall first, and that worked fine. Built the cannon, loaded it up, and tested it, and there was a kind of a bad miscalculation I made that caused the detonation of a stack of TNT 4 blocks wide and 12 blocks tall, resulting in a very large hole in the ground with a lot of water rushing into it.
Oh, shit.
So had to spend
I wish you'd had a video of that.
Yeah. Spend a couple days filling that hole back in, and it could have been worse. There were a lot of little bits left hanging in the air, so I could kind of connect the dots to get all the structures back. And I had a screenshot of the circuitry, so I didn't have to refigure that out.
The circuitry.
But yeah, got that all working, so that's pretty cool. Played some Bastion. Played that up to the first, it might be the only one, I don't know, the first big plot change, where instead of looking for cores, you're now looking for shards. And I said, okay, that's a good place to stop, and have not gotten around
to
picking
that back
up.
Are you sure that you weren't confusing it with Infamous?
Yep.
Because aren't you getting cores and shards in there?
I don't remember.
I feel like you also get cores and shards in World of Warcraft.
Just about everything, sure. Yeah. But yeah, that's pretty good. I would describe Bastion as the most well-polished, greatly simplified version of Diablo that I've ever seen.
Huh. The narration thing is the thing that I'm the most interested in.
That was nice.
That's a thing that it would not blow somebody away.
Mm-hmm. They wouldn't
necessarily
even notice it.
Yeah,
right?
But like it, thinking about how you would do that, if it's done the way that I'm led to believe that it's done, like it's a pretty impressive feat of design.
Yeah.
I need to buy that and play it now that I'm in a building with my Xbox.
Didn't you finish one last game of Dungeons & Dreadmore?
Oh, yeah. I finally finished the epic long game that I've been playing.
How'd
that go? I ended up 130,000 points.
Did you win? Did you kill
them? No, I did not. I got some bad luck in a... when you get down to the fifth level, they changed this thing in a patch that there was a greater than where there should have been a less than on the logic that determined whether a monster would cast a spell if it was a spell casting monster. Huh. So suddenly there's all these monsters that cast spells, including this one witch doctor monster that starts showing up on the fifth level that casts a spell that reduces your sight radius and stacks. So I opened a monster zoo and was like chugging along and killing all the guys in the monster zoo and like leading them out the way that you do in one of those monster zoos. But then a couple of those guys and a boss came out at the same time and those two guys blinded me. And then the boss was just doing like more than half or like close to half my hit points a hit. And I didn't know where he was. And it was fuck. But I mean, you know what? I'd rather get killed by a bunch of hard monsters than like some... There's also this fucking bug where you couldn't attack monsters that were standing near a door, but they could attack you. So I'm glad that I didn't get killed because of some bullshit bug. Oh, man. Is it time to take a break and solve a puzzle?
Sure.
What else have you been playing?
The other thing I've been playing was L.A. Noire.
Yeah?
Which is pretty awesome. It's particularly the writing. I've been really impressed with the characters and the writing and the dialogue, particularly the banter between the main character and his various partners is really great.
This was like right up your alley, right?
Yeah,
like you were super excited about this game when you found out about it. I am not even a little bit interested in
really. I watched you playing and it was kind of like watching a really gruesome episode of like CSI or something like that.
Yeah, you didn't even see the murder victims earlier in the game when you're working the homicide desk. There are some skull-crushed naked ladies lying in parks. That's pretty gruesome.
That's brutal.
Yeah, but...
It's not because it grosses me out. I mean, it's like because there's no swords or skeletons.
The idea of wandering around in a world and like finding clues and solving mysteries punctuated with like gunfights and chases. Mm-hmm. It's awesome, actually.
I really respect their decision of giving you like the huge Grand Theft Auto sandbox world, but making it really easy to just completely skip it and ignore it. Because it's designed such that you can, you know, you go from the police station to the crime scene and you actually drive there. And then you go from the crime scene to where this one witness lives and you drive there.
You can't hit other cars and stuff too, right?
You can't do it excessively. Huh. There's a limit. But if you don't want to fuck with any of that, if you don't want to drive around and see all the old-timey LA landmarks and look for hidden secrets, you just tell your partner, hey, you drive.
Huh.
And you get a little cutscene of the two of you talking about the case, and then it fades to black and fades back up at whatever location you suggest you picked.
That's crazy. That's a serious like decision that they had to have made.
Yeah, it changes it from a Grand Theft Auto game to a detective adventure game.
It's the crime scene game that you've wanted your whole life.
Pretty much.
That's great.
I'm glad you're having fun with it.
It's great. It's so well written. Anybody listening to this that likes hard-boiled detective novels like Chandler or Hammett or Elroy, you have to play this. It's really good.
It was cool watching you play for like 20, 30 minutes last night. So...
It scratches that deadly premonitions itch.
Yeah. Have you found the pickles?
The pickles.
Sweet pickles, bro.
Sweet pickles.
Bread and butter. Oh my God, you guys, the world.
The world?
What's going on in it, Kevin?
There are some things that happened recently. There was an announcement by Nintendo that they're dropping the price of their 3DS by some huge margin.
$80.
Which is a lot.
$170.
I was just going to make a joke that it had only been $90 before. So no.
No,
it was super cheap.
Sorry.
That's all right.
We can edit that out if you think it's funny.
It's
enough.
Not. So it's fine.
It's always the answer.
Yeah, but they're doing something cool for the people that bought the full price.
I've forgotten offhand when the price change happens.
I think it's August 11th.
Yeah, people who buy it and access the eShop before then, thus registering themselves as early adopters, will receive 10 free Nintendo games downloadable from the eShop. They'll get them for free. And before any late arrivers to the system can get them. And they will also get 10 free Game Boy Advance games, which late arrivers to the system will not be able to get. The entire lists of games have not been announced yet, but and I don't have what was announced in front of me, but as I recall, Legend of Zelda was in the NES games list. And
Ice Climber.
And
which,
Ice Climber and some I've, other some,
is that a
you know,
fun game? I've never even
Ice
heard
Climber
of it.
Was one of the very early Nintendo games. There's very little going on.
And Metroid Fusion is in the GBA games. Which
That's
is
a very good game.
Which is a very good game, and I'm surprised that they're going to put that on a list of games that people cannot ever buy.
I did not see the part where they said you will not ever be able to buy that.
They said that at this time we have no plans to release these GBA games to the public.
Huh. Well, that's cool. I mean, I don't know that this would ever have pushed me over the edge on buying the thing. Like, I wonder what the deal is. Like, I wonder if they're worried the platform is going to fail.
Well, that's certainly what drove the price drop. Yeah,
I mean,
because they screwed up the launch.
It was
pretty badly.
It was $260 or whatever.
$250, I think.
That's a lot to pay for a handheld console. I mean, not I guess compared to like some of the PSP stuff or whatever, but like it just seemed like that's as much as you pay for a new phone. And
well,
your phone
$250 is what
do a bunch of stuff.
$250 is what Sony announced the PS Vita would cost.
Okay,
and this drop happened shortly after to that.
You know, Penny Arcade said today, and our buddies at Self Aware Games had observed this when the 3DS was either first launching or first announced, that like, there's no value in a portable system anymore because my phone is my portable gaming system. And I just fundamentally don't feel like that, right? Like, I bought a 3DS. I never take it traveling. I never play it it traveling, but I don't play it in play. Like, I definitely use my phone, like, to play on the toilet or on an airplane or on a bus or whatever when I would not pull out a 3DS. But
Do you play Shadow Cities on a bus full of other dudes?
The Nintendo DS. Yeah, we each have two phones.
Yeah.
The DS was the platform for some of my favorite video games in the last 5 years, and so I was going to buy the follow-up to that because it is far enough behind the curve technologically as a platform that people have to focus on gameplay instead of graphics, right? And like, the thing that has like Super Nintendo era graphics and is currently having games developed for it is the thing that I want,
right?
In every case, right?
Somebody, one of the blogs I read pointed out today that people are saying that the lack of games on 3DS at the moment is a real dire situation, but he points out that at this point in time in the DS's release, basically the only games available for it were Feel the Magic, the super awkward Super Mario 64 clone, and like the worst WarioWare game.
There was the Kirby game was really early. I remember that being up in the first couple of weeks.
Yeah, but
was it that early?
I might have been. I didn't own it. I was just watching you play it, and that was one of the first games that you got.
I bought a first gen DS, but I think it had been around for a while. I don't think I bought it until there was a Castlevania game to play.
Okay,
but I could be wrong about that.
I don't know. Like, I come so late to all these things anyway that like
I definitely remember it being a long run up before the DS had a really satisfying library.
I think the 3D now, people are saying the same things about the 3D that they said about the touchscreen in the DS, which is like, well, you know, as soon as people start basically ignoring that feature and starting to develop to the strengths of the thing, you know, they're shoehorning 3DS into everything and making 3D a big selling point, the same way that everything had fucking awkward ass touchscreen controls.
Iwata himself said in the last couple of days that, you know, but in the future there are going to be games coming out for the 3DS that don't even have 3D, in the same way that there are games coming out for the DS now that don't really make use of the touchscreen. It's people are, the game creators are going to figure out what features this hardware has that make the most sense for the game, and that those are the ones they're going to use. Because it's also got the touchscreen and the gyroscope and the cameras, and there's
and
a ton of features
and
in there. Yeah,
I mean, there's like a lot of those games that use the microphone didn't need to use the freaking microphone.
Yep.
Blowing on stuff is just kind of annoying most of the time.
It's weird because, like, learning that that was, there was a microphone in the Famicom, and the whole thing with Paul's voice in the Zelda game was the way that you killed Paul's voice in Japan was to have somebody yell into the second controller. And that would just kill all the Paul's voice on the screen. And it says in the manual, he hates loud noises. And we were like, oh, that must have just been a bad translation of getting shot with arrows. Yeah, and like, so that seems to be a gimmick that they're not afraid to abandon. But, like, I don't think I've ever had it used for any good purpose. The only time I think I've ever seen a mic used to good effect was I was watching my old roommate play fucking... Splinter Cell the one where you're like a spy by yourself?
Yeah.
Okay, so it must have been
like
Ghost. Well,
there's a lot of games in the Splinter Cell series, but that's one of them.
Rainbow Six, maybe? It was one where he was commanding a squad of dudes.
Rainbow Six is a squad,
and he was just yelling and telling the dudes what to do, and it was like, huh.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have to fuck around with the joystick to say, cover me, or...
The shitty archaeology games I've played... generally have a feature where you're blowing the dust off of stuff, and you know that's it's not a tremendous feature, but it made sense.
I feel like what it does is it gets a lot of spittle on the screen.
Yeah, and it makes it so you don't want to play those games in public.
Yeah.
If you don't have to yell and you can just blow into something if it wants to make noise, I don't
tap your
that.
Finger on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, works a lot most of the time.
It's still tacked on. I mean, the thing, I hated that shit in the first Castlevania game for the DS where
to
it's
tap
like,
those
oh, in the middle of a,
blocks.
In the middle of a, which you just would like, fuck you for that, you know?
Yeah, fuck, I have to get the friggin' stylus out now.
And then it's
and
like
then
some crazy, and then in the middle of goddamn boss fights, when it's like, oh, you've got the boss vulnerable, now quick, pull out the stylus and trace this rune on the screen. It's like, fuck you, game. Yeah. Like, just, oh, God, leave it alone. You were so good.
You can just use your finger, though.
Yeah, sure. It wasn't always accurate enough.
Okay.
My fingers are fucking huge, Kevin.
Okay.
Just saying.
All right.
Trace this rune of a giant circular blob.
Yeah. Yeah, I certainly don't think that there is that much interesting stuff to say about the 3DS, right? Like, we're in this period of time where everybody really wants to talk about it, but there's just nothing going on. Yeah. So it's like, certainly not doomed, and it's certainly not the second coming of Christ
yet. You know,
yet,
this,
right?
This, like, what this did is got them a lot of effectively free publicity again, you know, post-launch. After they've almost sold 1 million units now, they've got like a bunch of people talking about it again.
I mean, there have been a bunch of fairly high-profile cancellations of projects, which I think is a little rough for them. Although they talked about the things that got canceled, and it was shit that I had never heard of and wasn't invested in this series at all. I mean, it wasn't anything that I particularly cared about. I mean, I feel like there will be some indie games for it that are good.
Were they
canceled not even necessarily indie,
because they had not sold enough units that the people thought that they'd be able to make enough money on the project? Is that,
I don't know.
Is that the idea?
I don't know.
I don't understand why you would cancel a project before.
I've heard the Nintendo reps are saying that they've gotten a lot of really good feedback from developers and you know, sellers of such things, that they're indicating that people are really happy about the price drop and see it as a good thing.
Sure.
So,
I mean, I'm excited to see, I guess, if there are more Legends of Zelda on there than there are Ice's Climber, then I'll be happy. I mean, you know, GBA games are good.
No.
Maybe there'll be like a what was that? Fire Emblem. Mm.
This is actually the first, and until this happened, we didn't know for certain that GBA games would ever appear on Virtual Console.
We kind of
so
still
pretty cool.
Don't, I guess, though, well, right? I mean, they, yeah.
We
knew that
presumably
they fucking, could. I mean, yeah. We knew they'd run on a ROM cartridge on a 3DS, right? Mm. Or on a regular
you
DS.
Needed a memory expansion, but
yeah.
What are you excited about in the news, Zach?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I am conspicuously failing to get angry about anything I've learned about Diablo 3 this week.
It actually sounds, I mean, the idea of the real cash auction hall is weird, but, you know, if I'm being forced to play online anyway and some shit drops that doesn't work for my build, Well, shit, yeah, I'll throw it on there.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
see if I get a few cents.
I'll throw it in for 50 cents worth of my World of Warcraft bill for this month, right? I mean, like...
Is that how it's going to work?
Yeah, it goes into a Battle.net. You have, like, a Battle.net wallet that you can cash out with a fee. You can use it to pay money that you owe to Battle.net. Like, you can buy games from them. Which, to say you can buy games from them, I mean... Like, once every 10 years when they release a game, you can buy a game from them, right? So
yeah, but it'll take 10 years to get $60.
If they start selling other stuff, then that's fine. The online-only play, so many people are super pissed off about that, and, like, I have such
How
a hard
often
time
do you play a computer game that is not you're not connected to the internet?
Never, right?
That's what I feel like, too. I can't imagine a situation where I would do that.
99% of people playing... Well, okay. Made up number percent of people playing are playing on a computer and have broadband always on internet.
Yeah.
So, I mean, most people are not playing this in the middle of the woods or on an airplane.
Right. And Rob Pardo, there was that quote from Rob Pardo about, like, yeah, I mean, I guess it kind of sucks that I can't play Diablo 3 on an airplane, but there's plenty of other games that I can play on my laptop on an airplane. And then there were these comments on, I forget if it was like fucking Boing Boing or Kotaku or what, but it was like, oh man, shows how much faith he has in his company. It's like, what? Like, you acknowledge, oh, right, because that you cannot
acknowledge that other games
exist. You cannot believe in your own product if you acknowledge that video games are a thing.
Plus, I mean, the reason they gave of not wanting people to play offline single player and then want to go to multiplayer and discover they have to start over with a new character, that strikes me as 100% valid concern.
I was frustrated when that happened to me on the original Diablo. And so I think in Diablo 2, I just played online.
Yeah, in Diablo 2, all I ever did was play by myself and on Battle.net. Something that struck me about this is, I don't know that this is the case, but I could imagine a situation where, like, they would not be able to write easily a single-player port of World of Warcraft, right? Because that is designed with a system whereby a server keeps track of the locations of mobs and does all the pathfinding and does all of this stuff. And who knows how many systems they now don't have to write two different versions of, because they know that every game of Diablo 3 is going to be played on Battle.net.
True.
Right? Like, I don't know how real that is, right? Like, in Diablo 2, I'm sure that they just passed the client a seed to use to generate the world, and then the client just generated its own copy of the world. Like, the server wasn't telling it where every pixel was, certainly. It wasn't telling it where every doorway was, right? Like, it was just stopping you from doing shit that didn't jive with its copy or whatever.
I mean, if this prevents map hacks from existing, that I think is it does. Huge.
You know,
that's
I think
a huge
that
boom.
And the fact that they're not allowing mods
is going
to make
that's
it
the third point.
An overwhelmingly better product for almost everyone who plays it.
Okay, why does the lack of mods make it better, I guess? That's what I don't understand.
Because if they don't need to make features available to mods, they don't need to open those features up at all, right? Like, it allows them, the fewer things that they have user configurable and the more control they have over the ways in which those things are user configurable, the fewer holes there are going to be.
You're talking about security? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. Cheating.
Huh. I mean, that seems strange to me. Maybe I don't understand the situation enough, but I don't see,
I mean, I think,
like,
you're coming at it from a World of Warcraft standpoint where all of the mods are just UI mods, right? Like, whereas what they're talking about is, like, completely changing, like, storing all of the single-player game flow data in XML files that somebody can edit to make their own version of Diablo 3, right? I mean,
they're talking about, like, modding the world.
Yeah.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
that's not what I didn't understand.
I mean, they're probably not allowing UI mods either. Which, you know, maybe that's a thing and maybe it's not, but, like, I you know, it is the amount of outrage that is started getting spewed about this. I mean, it's like the fucking color palette all over again. I mean, the color palette. Yeah, Diablo 2
when they were talking
like
about it
rainbow
being
shitting
too,
unicorns, like,
wow, really?
I know that this is probably what a lot of people said about, like, Hitler, right? But, like, it's fucking Blizzard, man. Like, what have they ever done that leads you to believe that they made decisions based on what would make them the most money instead of what would create the best experience for people playing their games. They've got plenty of fucking money. Yeah. And their owners, people are saying like, oh, ever since Activision got a hold of them and started making all their decisions for them, all they do is try to make more money. The Activision is not making their fucking decisions for them. They're totally leaving them alone. Because they're already making a bunch of money by making really high-quality products, by making decisions that people complain about on the internet, but then they still fucking buy the game, which is not the point so much as they still fucking play the game, and they still love the fucking game because it's a good game. Diablo 3 is going to be fucking awesome, and every decision that they have made was a decision that was geared towards making the game better.
Are we
going
to play it, the three of us, together the first time through as a group?
I am hesitant to agree to that because
of timing issues.
I'd like to do it. You still have not played StarCraft II. Sure. So if we had had a plan, like if there'd been a co-op on the campaign, I would have murdered you in your sleep.
Portal 2 co-op together.
Yeah, that took several months to get 4 hours of gameplay out of it.
Well,
I mean, I would play co-op with you guys, but I don't know that you guys play the same way I play, unless it was just Jim.
It was just Jim. Yeah. We tried a company Diablo 2 game years after the fact. We bought a couple extra copies of Diablo 2 and played it, and it was like a sort of high speed nightmare.
Yeah.
Our one ninja looter.
He would just rush ahead. He would just rush ahead, let us kill things, and then he would pick up all the loot.
I mean, that in itself can't happen in this because everybody's client drops its own set of loot, but I mean, just the general pace of play, I crawl through one of these games.
Yeah,
you know,
I definitely go slower than.
I mean, I go as slow as it takes to be like relatively thorough. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I'm getting bored, like I didn't comprehensively explore the fucking jungle levels in Act 3 of Diablo 2 because that shit is boring.
If you play with three people, is it three times as hard?
I don't know.
Like, because you know, we could all go into a level and then split up and explore it.
I don't know how fun that is because there's a lot of I played it a little bit at the last BlizzCon, not the last one, but the one before that. There was a lot going on that made me glad that like me and the two people I was playing with were in the same room.
Okay.
There are like these timed, there was like a timed collapsing dungeon thing. It was a thing where we went in and it was like, all right, you have a minute and a half until this dungeon collapses and there's like a good chest in here somewhere if you can find it. Like a light source boss. And like, that was pretty cool. You know, and like, I'm glad that we were all there because we were able to kind of split up and kill everything and explore everything. And then it was neat.
Sure. Yeah.
And I don't know how generated they are, but there are quests that spawn for you to do stuff like. Okay. You'll find a guy near a village, and he'll say, like, escort me to this village. And then I'll buy you an espresso.
Are you going to play with random people in mine? Are you going to play
escape?
I would never play with randoms.
Yeah, I'm going to play alone on Battle.net. Yeah. And then the only reason that I played on Battle.net before was, like, you know what? All I ever want is poison gems. All I ever want is emeralds. Because that was when I was playing when there was that bug where poison damage multiplied instead of added. So I was like, yeah. Like, you know, and everybody else is like, all I care about is magic item find or whatever. And I was just like, fuck that. I just want to turn everything green and watch it die. but so I like the idea of like, all right, I'm going to take all my sapphires and then find a game where people are just sitting around in town trading gems. And I'll be like, I'll trade you a sapphire for an emerald that's one level lower. And they're like, okay, sucker. I'm like, yeah, I'm not a sucker. I just wanted an emerald. Like, I would have just vendor sold this if it hadn't been for you. So, and I like the idea of being able to do that. And, like, being able to do it in an auction house is even nicer.
Yeah.
Right? Like, not having to fuck around and open a trade window and negotiate with dudes. Yeah. Like, oh, man. This is basically turning into solo World of Warcraft.
Huh.
I remember thinking when Blizzard talked about having a big announcement coming up, like a big new product announcement, which turned out to be their announcement for World of Warcraft, I thought, I'll bet it is an online-only Diablo. I'll bet they are going to announce the next Diablo game, and it is going to be a persistent online-only, like they're going to take Diablo and make it into an EverQuest game with Diablo playstyle. And, you know, it turned out to be, no, they're just going to take EverQuest and make EverQuest only way better.
Well, but they took their Warcraft
property. It was a different IP than I expected, but that's what I thought it was going to be, and now they've made that, and I remember being really happy. Like, I was like, you know, Diablo's pretty good, but I wish there were like, I wish you were like outside more and there were multiple towns right. and more like quest yep, progression yep. stuff going on. And then Diablo 2 came out and I was like, fuck yeah, it's
and,
rules.
And in 3, you get even more of that.
Yeah.
And like much greater focus on story and characters too, apparently.
Well, I don't know.
I'm excited.
I'm pretty stoked. And yeah. nothing that they have said. I mean, like Rob Bishizza on Boing Boing wrote like, well, I'd been looking forward to this game for 10 years, but now that they've announced that there's a cash shop, I'm not going to buy it. I was like, you know what? You're either talking out your ass or you're just a guy who's decided that outrage is more important to you than pleasure. So, like...
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Nobody is going to decide not to buy the fucking game. And, like, in a lot of ways, this is a dangerous situation, right? Blizzard kind of has you over a barrel because you're not going to not play their stuff, right? Like, they could pretty much do whatever they wanted and we would still play it.
That's not true.
And that's insidious. You know, depending on the extent to which absolute power will corrupt them, absolutely. The thing about the real money transaction stuff is that it's going to be happening anyway.
Yeah.
It's just this way, it's going to happen in a way that funds Battle.net. Right.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
And it's secure. You don't get ripped off by a fucker on eBay.
Exactly. And you trust, you know, it's not like some third party site that you don't know whether they're going to steal your fucking credit card or not.
Yeah.
I don't know how often that happened. Probably not very often.
Okay.
But.
So gold farmers. So will the prices for items be such that Chinese video game players can just sit there and play 12 hours a day and make a living
and
wage.
Make money?
I mean,
probably not, right?
Tobol mentioned it today or yesterday. He was talking about that, and he said what will happen is that the prices will be driven to their actual value, not the value that players think they ought
what
to have.
What does actual value mean for...
I got the glowing orange sword. That's totally worth 50 hours of my time to have gotten that. No, it's not. It's worth maybe $5. And that's the price that it's going to have on the auction hall.
Huh. You know, people did this with Diablo 2. And what's weird is I don't think that you would be able to convince a business to release something like Diablo 2 now. Right,
because
so here's this game that you're gonna sell people for $50, and then by the way, 10 years from now, you're still gonna be paying the electric bill on servers to let people play this for free. Like, that was real swell of them to do that, but I do not blame them for not wanting to do it again, because they're just sort of signing up for an arbitrary amount of money that they have to spend in the future.
You can still play Diablo 2, right? And they're not like saying, oh, we're shutting off Diablo 2.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So that's the thing. They're still paying for all this. There was a content patch for Diablo 2 like last year. They're still working on it. I don't know, some runes, Bale. I was going to say some words that are like Diablo 2.
Mogadishu.
I really liked Mogadishu, the Diablo and Diablo 2.
I can't hear them say anything else.
Rockanishu? Yeah.
Mogadishu.
I really liked the story arcs for those games. I'm pretty psyched to see what they do with the third one. You know, I like Blizzard. They're great.
I like dropping it in.
We went there. We went there and hung out for a couple hours.
That was news. We talked to some dudes.
Yeah.
Some WoW dudes. Some people who are talking on projects that are secret and they couldn't tell us about, or they wouldn't tell us about them.
Yeah.
They didn't tell us about them.
Which is fine.
They dasn't. Yeah, so we don't know shit. There's BlizzCon. People are looking forward to BlizzCon.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's going to be some announcements.
Yeah, I guess there's going to be some announcements. They were talking about how sad they were that there was nothing real meaty for BlizzCon last time. And yeah, who knows? Who knows? We saw some sweet... decorations on their cubicles. There were some tubes and some castle.
There's like six different divisions for their like web services area, and they
we got to go to the offices where they weren't making anything.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, the guy would point at something and say, "Don't look at that." And you'd be like, "All right."
Also, don't think about hippopotamuses.
And we didn't look at it.
Yep.
We didn't get anybody in trouble this time, so this is one better than our last Blizzard visit, or Blizzit, as we like to call them.
In other video game news, there's the new Humble Indie Bundle is out.
Oh, yeah.
I have yet to buy any Humble Indie Bundles.
I have bought games that are now in them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've bought Crayon Physics and
looking at that, I see I already have VVVVV and I played enough of COGS on some platform to know I don't need to buy it again.
Yeah.
And I wasn't interested in, and yet it moves, and I don't know anything about the rest of them.
Yeah, Hammer Fight is the other one that you guys have not mentioned.
But I mean, I guess, Humble Indie Bundle is the thing that you pay what you want for it.
Yep.
So I guess I could estimate what those two games I don't already have are worth to me.
I think if you pay $5, you might get even more stuff, too.
Are they all Mac-able?
I don't know.
COGS seems like a game that I would hate. I don't know anything about Hammer Fight. Is that the one where you're floating around and you've got some shit swinging off of you?
I think so,
That seems like it'd be really frustrating.
I remember Idle Thumbs talking about Hammer Fight.
There was apparently just a huge content patch. I downloaded it but didn't install it.
Didn't Notch design a level for it?
He opened up some level editing framework and then said that it started with either 6 or 10 or 60 levels that were made by other people. It's probably one of the first two. It might have also been 600.
16.
I don't know. Crayon Physics. I had a fun way of playing Crayon Physics because you got to rate yourself on whether your solutions for a given Crayon Physics level were awesome. Right? So you super win, and then you get awesome, which is just a checkbox that you pick whether or not it's awesome. So I decided that my criterion for whether or not my solution was awesome was was the last thing that I drew a cock and balls. And so there was a bunch of stuff where you could exploit these sort of weird tricks. Like you could draw, you basically sort of turned every level into a catapult. Like you could finish a tremendous number of the levels drawing only one shape.
How does this game work?
So there's like a ball and a
goal.
Yeah, there's a ball and a cock, and you have to draw the other ball. There's a ball and a star, and you draw physics objects to get the ball to the star.
Oh, okay.
Basically. So there's a lot of drawing a thing. You can draw a hinge and then draw a thing that's like a golf club that swings over and hits the ball. But you can attach things to the ball. And so the easiest way to solve a large number of the levels was to attach a great big thing to a ball such that the whole works would slide off a cliff.
Like cantilever over.
And then erase the thing when the ball was on a trajectory where if you let go of it at that moment, it would throw it at the star. And so the only awesomes I got were when I was able to do that with a cock and balls, which it's a kind of a good shape for that, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The tip of the cock, as though it is a pearly little bead at the end of the cock.
Jesus.
And then the balls hanging off the edge of the cliff where they get like a nice breeze on them. And then it falls, and then you just cut the whole thing in half.
Oh my god. Bobble's worst moil.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, those were the awesome solutions to Crayon Physics. And yet it moves. Is that the one where you're rotating the level around or the level rotates around and you're a guy on a piece of paper?
Yeah. There's torn paper aesthetic. I don't know about the actual gameplay.
See, if it was a rip torn papers. It was it's a text adventure
sausages.
Within a series of newspaper articles about Rip Torn.
All right.
Mostly about him getting drunk and robbing banks by accident. Did you guys see that video with Rip Torn and Norman Mailer, I think?
This is a long time ago.
Yeah, it's a video from the 60s where Rip Torn is just going fucking apeshit. It's awesome. It's you wouldn't even know it was Rip Torn unless they told you, but it's yep, that's definitely a young fucking totally crazy Rip Torn. Yeah, this is fine stuff. More news?
Yeah,
more?
I don't know. You said you might have some other ideas.
I had an idea, which
more?
Was to look at guns on my phone. Look at news on my phone.
On your gun.
News about guns on my phone. But I didn't.
Okay.
We ate Mexican food. Sweet world, bro.
Sweet.
Hey, so we didn't have an assignment because we didn't have any time to do anything except for all the video games that we played. But I made the executive decision that the assignment for next week is SSI's 1990 RPG, Eye of the Beholder. As far as I know, you cannot buy it anywhere. It is abandonware. It's like a 2 meg download. I found it like first Google link, and it runs in DOSBox, so everybody should be able to play it on everything.
Cool.
I found it, I think, at a website called bestoldgames.net.
Huh.
I think. Sounds... And it seemed to not install any spyware on my computer, at least not any that I could see.
That sounds like it's trying to be better than Good Old Games.
Sure. I mean, Good Old Games doesn't have Eye of the Beholder. This also has a handful of games that I learned about from reading that Dungeons and Desktops book that I had written down in my list of like, ah, shit, I should check out from these books. From these games from this book.
Right.
That I should check out. Like some game called Ishar, the Fortress of something.
Huh. Hmm.
Fortress of Shards. But I got all of the Eye of the Beholder games. So yeah, it's like a first person RPG. I think it's got like kind of real time actiony kind of combat, but it's like just an old school crawl in the,
your description of the interface has me worried in advance,
a little obnoxious,
but I'm willing to give it a shot,
but you get used to it. I mean, spend an hour on it and that'll be enough for us to talk about it. Cause you guys have never played anything like this.
I played the old turn-based SSI games.
You played the gold box games.
Yes.
These were the black. So
these came out later, and I did not play them.
Gold Bond Medicated Powder versus Barry Bonds.
I think I played through Pools of Radiance like 4 times.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. It was not good enough.
I was bored out of my mind by Pools of Radiance. Like, I was like, all right, sweet. I'm looking around a town. I've got some dudes. I'm ready for adventure. And then it's like, you're in a fight with 6 gnolls.
Yeah.
Get ready to spend a fucking hour moving dudes around, fighting these gnolls.
It did not take that long, but it was definitely repetitive. It definitely did not need to be as long as it was. And I think maybe I'm wrong. I could be misremembering. I think you get to carry your character forward if you play a second time with all of your gear.
Oh, wow.
So the second and third and fourth times were just progressively faster and easier. Yeah, like you just got to kill things. And that was a little satisfying. I think that's why I did it, but... Yeah,
let's do some listener mail.
Sure.
Okay. What do you think?
Yeah.
So on the Twitter, Sparkle Platypus writes, mostly for Kevin. I just got a new MacBook Pro with Lion. Thoughts on the App Store as a gaming platform or game recommendations?
So I checked it out when I got upgraded to Snow Leopard. These operating system names are terrible. And there was the offerings were pretty slim. I mean, you can get things like Braid. I think.
Yeah, Braid is on there. BioShock 1 is on there.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. There are some things that are good, but like compared to the sort of richness of like the iOS App Store and games there,
or
like
Steam.
Steam, which is also available on the Mac. It was really discouraging. And maybe that is a place that games will start to be more readily developed. I just don't think so. You know, I think.
It doesn't feel like a thing that's going to take
off. It does not feel like it. For games, you know.
I'm frustrated
with
the extent to which I'm afraid that this Origin thing is going to really fragment.
Origin thing?
Yeah.
It's EA's version of Steam.
And EA is starting to pull their shit off of Steam.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is really, what's aggravating to me is the notion that, like, oh, I bought this game on Steam and I can no longer download it from Steam.
What, can you download it
apparently,
from Origin?
Well, you can rebuy it on Origin, but from what I am hearing, you can't, after a certain amount of time, you have to pay again to re-download it.
I don't
from Origin.
Like that. I mean, we talked about this a little bit where I was like a little afraid of
what happens when Steam goes under. I mean,
yeah.
It's if everybody decides they want to compete with Steam at this point and starts pulling their shit off of Steam, like if you shouldn't be able to do that.
I think the thing that would be best is if you already bought it, you can download it forever. They just don't sell any new copies. And I think that would be the best, the most equitable solution to the users.
And that might be how it is. I don't know.
But yeah, then it also might not be that way. I could imagine them being like, no more downloads from your service or whatever.
Hmm.
But heck, I don't know.
I'm curious as to what the next little while is going to look like because, you know, Steam... they don't have a monopoly, really, but, like, Steam is just where you go. Like, I would rather buy a game from Steam than anything else, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even Good Old Games is slightly more cumbersome than Steam, because, you know, it's got its installer. It's not that hard, but it's, like...
I really like having that list of games that I've got, and I really click like the one I want to play.
It already having my credit card on file when I want to buy something.
I appreciate
that, you know,
that like, but Steam, at least on Mac, is a little clunky.
Is it?
Yeah, a little bit, but it's not...
It's not terrible, but it's just clunky.
Like
enough.
It's not like an amazing piece of UI design and interface work on the PC, but I just know how it works now.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So I had the same thing happen on Steam that you did, which was every time I would launch it, it would say, you know, Riff has added you as a friend, and I'd be like, okay, why do you tell me that every time I launch this thing?
Because what it means is Riff has submitted a request to add you to his friends list,
which
you have to approve, or else we're going to tell you about it every fucking time you launch Steam from now on, which is like,
if they would just
change the goddamn
that.
Sentence. Like, there's enough room to say what you mean in that box.
Like, that was so confusing to me.
Somebody made me feel stupid by explaining that to me after I complained about it on a podcast years ago. And I was like, that was not my fault. Donald Norman has taught me that that was not my fault. If a machine makes me feel stupid, it's the machine's fault and not mine. Because I'm a beautiful snowflake and I just learn a little. I learn a little differently than other people. That's okay.
Intravenously.
Winterbay pointed out on the Twitter that Guild Wars 2 is not instanced apart from your home instance, which is where your personal story developments are shown. So I didn't know that. I assumed they were using the same sort of instancing model as Guild Wars 1. Wonder how they're managing that then without a monthly fee.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, thank you, M. Pattimore, for recommending Everlands. That I like feeling dumb.
You know, it's worth checking out. I would be curious to hear what other people think about the game to see whether they think it's also dissatisfying or whether they think it's awesome and I'm the one that's dissatisfying.
And thanks to Teal Hydra for telling us about the Gacky Wacky or whatever.
Yeah, that thing is crazy.
Yeah, I don't even know, man. Azulian writes, Dungeons of Dreadmoor is super fun. Have you guys explored the mushroom power? Because it is the win skill.
I kind of ignored mushrooms because I had no inventory space, and so they were one of the first things I threw away because I didn't know what they would do if I eat them.
I never used potions because I didn't know what they were going to do if I ate them, and they just kept taking up space because I didn't want to get rid of them because I'm like, oh, if I get in a bind, I'll drink these potions. But like, no, if I get in a bind, I'm even less likely to drink these potions.
The potions basically told you, I mean, this not the stuff like Aqua Regia, which you should never drink, but the ones that were actually drinkable potions seemed like they told you more or less what they did, but the mushrooms were just a mystery.
Hmm.
You had no idea what it was in. I mean,
it randomized per playthrough?
I don't think so. I have no proof of this, but I think that a given mushroom always did the same thing. It's just the description didn't tell you what that was.
Interesting.
And I didn't feel like taking the time to experiment and learn that.
Yeah, the mushroom thing, I guess, had a pet, which is probably pretty useful. I found pets pretty helpful.
Apparently the fire tree had a pet, too. I probably would do better if I had a pet, but I hate managing a pet in a game like that. Like, in playing NetHack, I just abandon the fucking dog or whatever the first chance I get. I, like, make sure and keep it away from me when I go down the first set of stairs because I hate it getting in the way. And I know it's critical to survival, which is why I'm never going to beat NetHack. But let's see. Fred Levi says in the forum thread, which, hey, guys, remember the forums? Not a lot of people hanging out there. Go to videogameshotdog.com and follow the link to the forums. Come chat with us because they're forums.
Yeah. They're good forums there. If you've been soured on internet forums by every other video game forum in the universe, our forum is pretty good.
Yeah, the signal-to-noise ratio is pretty high. Yeah.
Anyway, he writes, have you ever played Lit for the WiiWare service? It's a survival horror puzzle game where you have to navigate a darkened school using the things around you, smashing out windows, turning on computers, etc., to generate light, as stepping in the shadow is death. I think you might like it, although Zach immediately hates it because he doesn't like the Wii or navigating the Wii shop channel. Also, the plot is given to you via phone calls that come in through the Wiimote speaker.
Oh, that's cool.
That would be better if the Wiimote speaker wasn't
really
like,
terrible.
Like worse than the speaker in like a greeting card that has a speaker in it that talks to you when you open it. I probably do. I probably hate the Wii and the Wii Shop channel. I don't even know, man. The 3DS was fine. Like, it was pretty painless buying stuff on the 3DS.
Once you figured out that you could search for a category and not just a title.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because that was the first thing that freaked me out. Was like, all right, so I can find a game that I don't know the title of if it is a sports game or a card game or starts with the letter W. But it turns out you can type in adventure and it'll give you a list of adventure games.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I've not spent a lot of time browsing. I bought that Shantae game because you said it was good. Mm-hmm. I bought the things that were free because they were on the front page.
I haven't looked at it in a few weeks. I guess I should go see what's popped up in there.
Casey Wienerman says to mention the forums on the show more often. Hey guys, did you know we had forums?
Hey, they're pretty good forums too.
Oh, let's see.
Obligatory, so they're better than 3Ms.
We don't let Kevin post
yeah,
very much. So Kevin's talking about me being sick. Caleb says, have you guys played Champions Online before? Any desire to do so now that it's equal parts free to play and on Steam? I tried to make Cold Cock, 1930s noir detective, cryogenically frozen in time by alien technology, revived to dispense hard-boiled justice to the criminals of the future with sweet ice powers, but all the relevant costume pieces were subscriber only. Free to play is the worst.
That's really sad because that is the best superhero I've ever heard of.
Yeah. So I played Champions Online in the beta. I was like, this shit is terrible.
Yeah.
And
I mean, wasn't it sort of just a City of Heroes redux kind of thing?
Yeah, City of Heroes without a very good character creator or very good content. I mean, City of Heroes content wasn't that great. The tutorial in City of Heroes is fucking awful.
Is it?
But like,
I've considered going and checking out City of Heroes since it became available for Mac, but I just never got around to it, and I kind of figured an MMO is not something I should get involved in.
You wouldn't get into it, really? I don't think. But seeing it, the like randomly generated mission stuff is kind of cool. All of the systems that they have tacked on to it, like, because it started out there was not really any loot or anything. You'd get these kind of like power up things that you could socket into your powers that change things about them, and it was kind of like loot, but they weren't really loot.
So like a guitar.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a
sort of violin, maybe
a dulcimer.
Yeah.
Then they added salvage loot and stuff that you could like craft, which did like it got real messy. There was just like the last time I tried to play it, there was just all this shit that I'm like, what is this? Like the interface, it struck me as a game that had made a lot of changes to support a dedicated and aging player base.
You know, that was
like the font got bigger and bigger.
Yes. That was what really surprised me for like the afternoon that I spent playing Team Fortress 2 was that it had a crafting system.
Oh yeah. Huh.
Yeah. And I still don't really know what's going on there, but it seemed like the weirdest game in the world to have a crafting system.
Was the interface bad?
I couldn't really understand it because I never acquired anything that you could
actually make anything.
Yeah, I don't know if I was just was not playing long enough to find things that could be dismembered.
To me,
parts.
That seems like a weird game to have items.
Yeah,
right. But
yeah, we need to play that.
We do.
Yeah, we do.
We do.
We should do that
one of these days.
Someday.
Hey, soon-ish. Let's make that our assignment before we leave to go camping for 2 weeks.
Right.
So you can imagine that you're playing it while you're hiking.
Yeah. So I hope we have a medic. I mentioned this elsewhere, says Gamelli in the forums, but I'd be really curious to hear your collective thoughts on the Serious Sam series, specifically Serious Sam 2. I'm replaying it now, and it's A, harder than I remember, and B, just as twisted and bizarre as I recalled from the first time through. I mean, secret suicidal tree discovered. So, like, that was a game that I only played because I, like, borrowed it from my dad. Like, that was very much his kind of game. It was, like, a run around and shoot
a thousand dudes. I don't know anything about it other than the fact that it's meant to take the old-school Quake equation and dial it up to 11.
Yeah, it's a first-person... I mean, it's a first-person shooter that is literally all you do is shoot dudes. Like, there are secrets that you find, and then it's just, like, secrets found. And, you know, there are a handful of, like, hidden things that you can get to in levels or whatever, but it's largely, like, it'll just... All right, so you get into here, and then the door closes behind you, and then 1,000 dudes attack you.
Huh.
And so it's just, like, mowing down hordes of dudes. Every once in a while, there's, like, these big bull things that attack you that you have to get out of the way of them when they're charging you. And sometimes there'll be guys with no heads and bombs instead of hands running at you.
It sounds like X-Cop.
Yeah, you know, it was like they took just the violence and none of the, like, sort of juvenile... I was going to say pedophilia, but I think what I meant was misogyny out of Duke Nukem. Yeah, probably not a lot of pedophilia in Duke Nukem.
I mean, like, those strippers could be underage. Bigger,
right? Yeah.
You don't really know.
I don't think it's pedophilia. Still.
Okay.
I think an underage stripper that's employable as a stripper, I don't think that counts. I think that's one of those 4chan wants you to learn the difference kind of things. Shop Troll asks if anybody's checked out Jamestown. If no, here's a brief explanation. Yeah, a bullet hell shmup set in 17th century colonial Mars and a very fine 16-bit aesthetic. That's the kind of thing that I would like to see, but I don't know.
I'm not a huge bullet hell fan.
I'm just starting to get into them a little bit. I'm not good at them, and I don't like the ones that are complicated. Because some of them, there's one, I forget which one it is, but enemies fire black bullets and white bullets. And
oh,
you can
Christ.
Switch between
That was like a DS game, right?
Yeah,
one of them hits you and one of them doesn't or something?
One of them hits you Ika and Ruga. The other is like power pellets. But... And you can switch which is which at any given time.
Yeah, it's Ikaruga, I think.
Yeah,
is that.
Yeah. And it's like, that's fucking baffling. I can't handle that.
So if you were really good at it, you would
also,
just absorb
white,
all of the bullets.
I'm white, black, colorblind.
But the one I've been playing on the iPad is simple to the point where you don't even have to push the bomb button on your own if you're about to get hit. If you get hit, you drop a bomb.
Oh.
And if you don't have any bombs, you die. And I was like, all right, that's my
speed. That's super friendly.
I want to do all my concentrating on moving out of the way of bullets. And they made it a little more interesting because you power up your super ultra cannon by moving as close as possible to bullets without getting hit by them.
Ooh.
Yeah. But once you fill up that meter, it automatically goes. So you don't have to worry about turning that on or anything.
Huh. You know what was a pretty good bullet hell game? It wasn't really a bullet hell game, but it was definitely like a top-down space shooter. It was that Space Invaders Infinity Gene
the iPhone. Oh, yeah. That was good.
It was like pretty fun.
I enjoyed that.
Although my little evolution tree looked super weird because there was one level that was obviously the best place to get the highest multiplier. I was wondering, there was just this sort of like unbroken field of those hexagonal monsters, and if you got back far enough with the wave beam, you could just get like an 1800 or 2000x multiplier by the end.
I was trying hard to make my tree sort of symmetric, and that's just a fight you cannot win. For the iPhone, the game Phoenix is decent. It's got that adaptive difficulty. The better you do, the harder it gets.
Nice.
And then you get the more, if you get hit more often, it dials it down and makes it easier.
That was supposedly true of Zanac for the NES.
Huh.
Which was a game that I played a lot, but I don't remember liking it, really. There were a lot of different weapons. There were like a tremendous number of power-ups, which was a thing that I always really liked. What I always really wanted as an adult was like, why don't they just take the games that I liked when I was a kid, but add like 100 times as many different power-ups? Because power-ups rule, right? Mm-hmm. So just like, how about some different power-ups? Like, take all the power-ups from this game, and then all the power-ups from this other game, and then like mix them all together, and then figure out what happens if you combine all those power-ups with all those other power-ups. Just like power-up plus.
Huh.
Did you ever read that Sean Baby article about the worst video game power-ups ever?
No.
I think the top one was there was an invisibility cloak in Wizards and Warriors that what it did was made your character invisible on the screen, but monsters could still see you.
That's awesome.
Wizards and Warriors was one of the worst games ever.
I get it confused with Ghosts and Goblins, which was fun, but it was super, super hard.
Yeah, Ghosts and Goblins was super hard, but it was a decent game. Like, Wizards and Warriors, you kept playing it because you wanted it to be good. It was called, it was called Wizards and Warriors. You were a warrior, and you fought some wizards, so that was cool. There were, like, a bird.
Yeah. I remember the graphics being good for the time.
Kind of. It was, it controlled really badly, and it suffered from, like, at times, it was sort of difficult to tell what things you could stand on and what things you couldn't, and like when, like whether you could make a jump or not. Like watching a Let's Play of Wizards and Warriors, best fucking title screen music ever.
Yeah.
I will go And now that's it. For the next week, I'm going to have the title music from Wizards and Warriors stuck in my head, and I'm just going to be whistling it. Ah, sweet. I'm going to edit it in here just so everybody else can get it stuck in their head.
Cool. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the end of the listener mail.
Hey, Kevin, if somebody wanted to send us a listener mail, how would they do it?
They could do it through the regular mail, which is at a P.O. box that I do not know. Do you happen to know it off the top of your head?
41774 Mesa, Arizona, but I don't know what the zip code is.
It's like 80126 is not that at all.
Listen to advice, hot dog. Get to the point where Roy tells you the P.O. box address, yeah. And then send a letter there.
Yeah. Mesa, Arizona, there's probably only a handful of possible zip codes, so you could just send one to all of them. All right. The better ways, probably, you could tweet at us at VG Hot Dog on the Twitters.
We always get to all of those. So
that's true.
If you really want
every week we
to
go
tell
through
us something
all those.
And hear your name, like friend of the show, David.
Yes.
From BioWare. Thanks again, David, from BioWare.
You could send us an email at vghotdog@gmail.com. We often check that, though not every week. And then you can send a question in on the forum, which we'll get to eventually, almost definitely. And that is best gotten to by going to videogameshotdog.com and looking for the forums link.
Do you think it would be funny if I pretended every once in a while that I thought our friend David worked for Bethesda instead of BioWare? Because
Black Mesa?
I used to get those companies mixed up a lot. And so I'd be like, hey, dude, David, can you get me into the Fallout 4 beta? And he would be like, "That even if I did work for Bethesda, that wouldn't be a thing. I hate you, Zach." I think that's what he would say to me. Let's go eat a steak. All right. I think we're good to go. I think it's been a sweet show, bro.
Yeah, kind of moment. Long bro show.
Good night, everybody.
Have a great week, everybody.